and welcome to the 250, the podcast where I can't find the trigger. I'm Douglas, and with me as always is my co-host Jonathan. How are you, Jonathan?
I'm great, Douglas. Thank you.
If this is your first time tuning into the 250, we have taken a snapshot of IMDb's top 250 movies of all time as of January 2020, and I've been watching them from number 250 through to number 1. In this podcast, we discuss our opinions, thoughts, and reactions to the movies within. Today's movie is number 71, Dark Knight Rises.
8 years after the events of The Dark Knight, Bruce Wayne is thrust back into the limelight after a terrorist cell cuts Gotham off from the outside world and threatens annihilation with a fusion bomb.
The Dark Knight Rises is written and directed by Christopher Nolan, who we know for The Dark Knight, Batman Begins, Interstellar, Inception, Oppenheimer, a bunch of other films. It is written by Jonathan Nolan, who is Christopher's brother. He's written like a bunch of Batman stuff, primarily within conjunction with Nolan. He originally wrote Memento, and then it was Christopher who adapted it into a film, and then he also wrote The Dark Knight and Interstellar, off note, and credited with story, I don't believe writing credit, but story credit, is David S. Goyer, who has basically done pretty much anything Batman-related on screen over the past 20-odd years. David S. Goyer's name is probably attached to it.
I didn't know about that. That's very interesting.
Yeah. So, like, Batman v Superman, he's done that. All three of the Nolan Bat flicks. He hasn't done Matt Reeves' Batman. He wasn't a part of that crew in any way. Anything Blade-related, he's in on. He did Blade 2, First Blade, Blade Trinity.
What a guy. Did you say that we've both watched this before?
Oh, yeah, we both watched this film before, right?
Yeah. I watched this back in freaking high school on my laptop.
It's been a long time since I watched this movie.
Dumpy Asus laptop. This very distinct
just
memories.
As David Lynch would have intended it to be watched. Fun to be back in the Nolan Batverse again after Batman Begins.
You were worried about this film holding up, Douglas.
I was.
Uh-huh. Do you think it held up?
This has got to be the weirdest film out of Nolan's whole catalog. Mm. Like, it's just so kooky and out there, you know? Mm. It makes a lot of decisions where I'm like, what the fuck? In, like, the screenplay primarily, some of the lines and, like, the delivery of some lines, I'm just kind of like, huh? Mm. And then how all in Bale and Hardy go on their respective bits as their characters is crazy. But overall, I don't know whether I think it's like, it's just above average for me. Like, there's a lot of really fun stuff going on, and I love that it's so kooky, but there was a couple of times where I was just kind of like, oh, what is happening now? What the fuck? Yeah. Oh my God. Okay. All right, like, we'll get into it in the spoilers, but more on those thoughts of, like, what the fuck. But yeah,
I think my also, like, short, you know, response is that I was also like, I don't know about this one, actually. Which is, number one, heartbreaking, because I love Tom Hardy with my entire
well
soul.
Well documented, yeah.
And I was just like, oh, shit. Okay. Fuck.
This damn podcast always ruining things that are good for us.
Well, I mean, if I'd watched it again, like, this is the other thing, is I think I wasn't really sitting there and, like, properly, like, plugged in, you know, like, when I was watching this. Like, not completely. Like, I wasn't going full critical mode. And I think, even still, I was like, some decisions here. It is funny, like, the takeaway that I swear it was just everyone's, like, number one takeaway from this film when they first saw it, when it came out, was they were like, man, Bane's voice is really strange. And everyone found that distracting. And I went, like, honestly, don't think that was the most distracting thing in the film by, like, by, like, a wide margin, really. Because I saw that interview, I don't know if you've seen it, about Tom Hardy talking about how the voice came about. Because Tom Hardy is British, and there was this, I forgot the guy's name. He's this Romani, like, sort of like a bit of a leader amongst the travelers, as it were. And he, he's a big boxer, which I gather is probably had some influence on Snatch as well. Like, sort of like Brad Pitt's character in- Brad Pitt's, right? Well, yeah, Brad Pitt's character in Snatch.
Yep.
And the guy has this crazy accent. It's really strange, but it's like more or less what Tom Hardy does for that thing.
Interesting.
So, it was pulled from somewhere, you know? He had this idea of, like, this character that I think is, like, he's, like, really intimidating in the way that he presents himself. But the guy has, like, to a normal person, sort of has a voice that doesn't seem intimidating. And then
I liked the, this time around, I found it to be a more off-kilter kind of a thing. You know, there's a sense of dissonance between how he sounds and how he looks.
Mm.
But also, you know how Nolan is well reputable for absolutely shitting the bed on the sound mixing front, or at least like with the sound mixing department, fucking just the worst.
Yeah.
When I first saw Tenet the first time in cinemas, I couldn't understand probably about 80% of the dialogue in that film, which is crazy because I still love that film. Like, even in the cinemas, I loved it. And afterwards, I still loved it.
Did you see it at your IMAX theater, or did you
see
it?
Yeah, I did. That's not at the big bougie new one. Okay. They did do reruns of it at that cinema, though. But yeah, I saw it at an IMAX. Yeah. And it was just crazy.
We're immediately in the weeds for this one because I do also remember some YouTube video talking about, I mean, this is then based on an interview that Christopher Nolan had where he was talking about they decided, because he works with the same sound guy, I think, in all of his films.
Mm.
And they decided that they wouldn't mix films for bad sound systems. They wouldn't mix audio for bad sound systems. So, ostensibly, if you're in, like, a beefcake IMAX, like, top-tier 10 out of 10 sound system cinema, you'll be able to make out a lot of stuff. That's, like, half of it. And the other half is that he likes this sort of realism aspect and that. And then, if you're in, like, a dumpier cinema, you might not, you know, this stuff might not be as legible. You know, you could argue about the legitimacy of that take till the cows come home, but I just think it's interesting that that was his point. Like, we're only mixing sound for really good quality cinemas, and then you went to a very good quality cinema, and it was like still fucking illegible,
still kind of naff, sort of
strange. Anyway,
yeah. What I wanted to say with that, sorry.
Yes, yeah, sorry. Oh, I ran away with that, sorry.
No, all good, all good. My takeaway was that Bane, the way they mix Bane's voice, they always put it, like, all the way at the front. So, no matter sonically where he is in a scene, he is always, he sounds like he's right in your ears, like, every single time.
Yeah.
So, that avoids any kind of, what is he saying? Like, with the mask on and everything, you can't, like, read the lips to kind of make a kind of rough approximation of what's happening. So, I thought that was actually a really fucking smart decision and a really cool way of handling that character in a way that still makes his voice very intimidating, you know? When it, because it booms all the way through, like, everything, the Foley, the music, it just cuts all the way to the front, which, yeah, I really enjoyed. I thought that was cool.
Basically, my whole take here is that I'm jumping to the defense of Tom Hardy because because that was the take that everyone had. Like, Tom Hardy's voice was weird.
What the fuck are you doing, Tom Hardy? Yeah.
And his voice was weird and it was distracting. And then I'm like, did you watch the rest of the movie?
We
watched Batman Begins No.
Mm-mm.
I was about to say fairly recently. It definitely was like a year ago.
Batman Begins was, let me double check this on the old Letterboxd here. More on Letterboxd at the end of the podcast. Not really. Letterboxd is just a cute little website.
Oh, God. Yeah, it was more than a year ago. It was more than a year ago.
Yeah. Would you look at that? It was December of 2022.
Mm. Anyway, that one. yeah, Batman Begins, way back when.
Batman Begins.
I distinctly remember us saying that, like, our least favorite parts of the film were when Batman was on screen. Like, his voice is so stupid. And, like, there was a distinct spot in this where they have Batman, you know, fighting someone like on the ground, and he's in like full light. He's in like floodlights. I think there's like the cops following or something. And he looks so fucking bad. Like he looks like a fucking complete cartoon character.
Not in a good way.
Yeah, and I feel like that was still the case here. Hard to take seriously. I don't know. Strange. And then, yeah, we shouldn't. We're already dabbling on it for too long, but the plot just seemed like complete gibberish to me. We'll step over it, but it's like,
it just kind of keeps on running away with itself, and then you constantly feel like you're kind of having to play catch up of like, wait, what is, who's, where are we? Okay. And then something else happens, you're like, okay. And then, yeah.
So
it's pretty whiplashy.
Anyway, let's skim over what we can. I think, strong feelings about the score, Hans Zimmer. Back again.
I actually don't mind this one. I thought this one was kind of fun. I don't know what's different about it from this one to Batman Begins, but it just feels more punchy, you know? I really like Gotham's Reckoning, which is one of the most listened ones on the whole soundtrack. Yeah, it's got a real nice, fun, Zimmery kind of drive to it, which I really enjoyed. And then, once again, another one that has nigh on the most listens on the soundtrack, Rise, which is like a 7-minute long piece, also has fantastic amount of drive because it's got all those Zimmery percussions going crazy, the string sections are going wild. Yeah, very punchy.
It feels like it's a bit held back compared to the sort of standard Hans Zimmer moment.
You reckon?
Yeah, I don't know. Lots of low string sort of, this sort of like quiet, stealthy underground kind of feel, I suppose, like, which I think fits quite well. I almost like don't want to like talking about Hans Zimmer feels so silly because like he is the default
cinema orchestra like guy.
Big deal. Yeah. You know, he's a Christopher Nolan guy. Everything he does is loud and bombastic and.
Well, I'm hoping now that this is recorded after the 2024 Academy Awards, I'm hoping Ludwig Göransson will now start to slowly creep up into that kind of... I think he already is kind of there, but just more in the general consciousness of the public because he won Best Score for Oppenheimer, which I'm so fucking happy for because, like... There were some really good scores. Like, Poor Things had a fucking fantastic score. Really, really creative and really insanely sonically complimenting the film as well. But I don't know. Oppenheimer was crazy. Ludwig was really cooking on some mad shit with Can You Hear the Music and Fusion and What We Have Done. Yeah, there's so many good tracks in that.
I just feel like Ludwig maybe has... For want of a better term, like more range or like more of a variety. Whereas, you know, Hans Zimmer is sort of like a John Williams type guy. He has fairly recognizable sound.
That being said, his works for Dune were kind of fucking out there. I thought were kind of crazy. But the craziest he's probably been with a soundtrack since maybe like Interstellar, you know? You're right. He does have a pretty... When he locks in on a film, he finds, like, an identity to go with the film. But more often than not, there is, like, a Zimmer kind of quality that's underneath all of that.
Yeah.
But, true. I don't know. Points for? Points against?
Points for, points against. Yeah. I mean, it fits. I basically, like we always say, I wasn't listening... I wasn't thinking about it too much, which...
I wasn't listening to you.
Like we always say, I was ignoring Douglas. Classic podcast situation. Visuals, costuming, set building. I think that I should have...
Strong thoughts on production design, but...
I should have checked this. I'm assuming a lot of the big exterior shots are just, like, shots of New York. I think that Gotham is meant to be like a stand-in for New York. Although so is what's the city that Spider-Man is in? Oh wait, no, that's different. No, the city that Superman is in is sort of also meant to sort of be New York.
Mm.
And they're in the same world. Metropolis and Gotham Metropolis, are sort of,
yes.
Sort of
they're
supposed
like,
to be
they're supposed to be across the bay or whatever, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So where the fuck was Superman and all this shit? Yeah. I don't know. The one thing that I did really notice was the visual. I don't know if he's done this in previous ones, jumping between like a letterboxed and a full frame.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Depending on.
We talked about that in our recording schedule is kind of a bit fucky at the moment.
Mm.
Next week, we're doing Dune Part 1 and Part 2 as a bonus episode. And I believe I talk about that in. When we're talking about Dune Part 2, I noticed it, but I didn't notice it in Dune Part 1. But
I didn't notice it in Dune Part 2 at all. I think I didn't notice when you were talking about it in the episode as well.
Well, there you go. If I didn't talk about it, hey, here's me talking about it. I noticed it midway through Part 2, and then I couldn't unfucking see it. Like, every single time it happened, I was like, ooh, why are we doing this? Like, why now? You know, like, why are we removing the letterbox for this particular situation?
Yeah.
And it's amazing how Nolan can almost lull a viewer and an audience into such a state that you don't even notice it, you know? Mm. You don't even know it's a thing until someone points it out. And then you go, oh, shit, I am seeing more of the picture.
Yeah.
So, and I think usually it's reserved for, in Dark Knight Rises at least, it's reserved for scenes where there's either more he wants you to see of like a landscapey kind of a shot, or there's like a shit ton of extras. There's like just a bunch of people and he wants to get them all kind of on screen and looking big. He wants the scope, the scale.
Just in general, it makes sense to go full frame for your, I mean, it's not full frame technically, but you know what I mean? For your action-y shots, your-
Yeah.
Then if you then letterbox it for the conversation stuff, it actually just gives you a smaller frame of stuff to focus on. So, it means that you're kind of looking in the right place, I think, is the idea.
Mm.
Yeah. Yeah. So-
Man, we're, again, talking about how we've filmed this or we're recording these episodes kind of higgledy-piggledy at the moment. I know for a fact that Jonathan here has already seen Old Boy way ahead of us even publishing that episode.
Uh-huh.
And I don't want to give away like too much of the thoughts on Old Boy, but after seeing Old Boy, it reshaped how I thought about action scenes. I'm not going to lie. So,
yeah.
Like how to frame an action scene, you know?
Yeah.
How to compose one.
I think like a lot of the action in this film is like perfectly serviceable. Like I'd say it's even, I'd say it's good, you know, compared to some of the, and especially in this period of time, like the mid
2012s. Yeah.
The mid 2010s or around 2010 was when there was a lot of cheap garbage action stuff where it would be like, you know, a quarter of a second per cut and it would just be impossible to catch what the fuck was going on.
Wow, 2012 was a crazy time for cinema. That's some mad shit that was going on in 2012. Wow.
2012 in general was pretty crazy. Like,
first video games film came out, first Hunger Games film came out.
Big music time. Yeah.
Mm. Skyfall. Wow.
I've become distracted. I think the way that the action was shot was pretty good. I think the way that a lot of it was composed was not quite as good. And also, there's a very key complaint I've seen in a lot of places that you've got Batman, he's got this utility belt that's supposed to be full of all kinds of crazy goodies. And, you know, you look like, for example, the not to nerd it up, but the Arkham games. You've got this repertoire of like grappling hooks and hanging smoke the ceiling bombs and sneaking in the shadows and stuff. And in this film, he just punches people.
Yeah.
That's about it.
Yeah. Maybe that's one of the reasons. Wow. Maybe that's one of the reasons I like Matt Reeves's The Batman so much over any other presentation of him yet. For one, I like the detective angle. That's already well documented. I love that it makes him like the world's greatest detective, first and foremost, and makes him Punchy Man second. But also, like right at the start of that film, they literally present the idea that he hides in the shadows. And yep. that's like his whole bit, is that he strikes fear into the criminals of Gotham purely by just stating that he is always in the shadows. He's yep. always kind of lurking around waiting for you to fuck up so he can come in and punch your teeth in. Like, I never really feel that with Bale's Batman.
There's that one fight where Batman, like, turns the light, he breaks something, or he turns something off with his little yeah. thingy to yeah, so he's in darkness and he's like he's trained for the darkness, and it just felt like they just did that just so that they could say, oh, you think
born in the dark.
I mean, yeah, like, you think the darkness is with great line, by the way, but you know,
fantastic line.
Absolutely, thank you, Tom Hardy. But
thank you, Tom.
It's like the born film is light. Telling you that he's the, like, sneaky,
yeah,
stealthy, yeah. and then, like, what's
but
actually on the
really
screen is not that.
We haven't anything to give us that in this film or in any other the other films prior. I mean, it's been a while since I've seen The Dark Knight, and we're not going to watch it for, like, another fucking year or something yet.
Mm.
But
The Dark Knight is interesting because it does feel like it hits that detective angle a little better
yes.
than-
yeah.
Like, this one just from doesn't memory. Do it at all. You know?
Yeah. Mm.
He's sort of- this is more about him being an icon, which is also sort of- another interesting
being
angle.
An icon, Slay Queen.
Yeah. Boots the house down, etc.
Boots the house down, absolutely. etc. <cetera.
laughs> I cannot believe- fuck. The Dark Knight is number four, man.
Yeah, it is so incredibly high. And remains that high to this day. It's been 4 years.
I don't think we're going to think it was that good, will we?
Yeah. Given how these two films are performing, I'm very nervous to see
yeah.
just where that film is going to look. I think it's going to be a completely neat four-star film.
Four-star film. Yeah.
Not masterpiece, but, like, just a clean little four-star, middle of the trilogy, cute little piece of cinema.
Yes. But- anyway, we've all forgotten what
Alas,
was going on in that film. It's basically
we
what
are
we're
talking
saying.
About The Dark Knight Rises. Which, by the way, we've been faffing on here for long enough, Jonathan. I think it's time for you. I don't know about you. I think it's time we get over into the spoiler section. So tell me, Jonathan, do you recommend 2012's The Dark Knight Rises?
It's a very silly movie, Douglas. It's very silly.
And that was a very silly sound.
I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's kind of a clusterfuck.
Yeah.
God, like, if you like Tom Hardy, this
yeah.
is like,
yeah.
they, once again, they don't really give him much in this film, also.
Yeah.
But I do like
the
looking
they
at
do
him.
Give him, like, he kind of runs away with, so.
Yeah, I suppose. The story is a clusterfuck, and it makes almost no sense. And I think that-
absurd.
I think that- yeah, so what I was trying to get at there with The Dark Knight is that these Christopher Nolan Batman films are more about, like, the icon, the moral and ethical and whatever angle about Batman and rogue justice type shit. What's the word?
Vigilante justice. Yeah.
Type shit. Like, which is interesting stuff to talk about. I think it's worthwhile. And I mean, like, who am I to say, like, ooh, this Batman movie doesn't have the parts of Batman that I like? Because I actually am not really, like, a comic book fan.
Super
really.
Batman, yeah.
Yeah. So, who gives a shit, I suppose. But, I think that, like, The Dark Knight did, like, a really good job with what it wanted to say in terms of, like, story-wise and morals and ethics and blah, 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 blah. And I think yeah. that this film is just following from that, and it sort of didn't really have an amazingly good reason to exist. I don't know. Nah, there's better movies, especially, like, around this list.
Yeah.
What we got recently? Dust Boot, Your Name, Return of the Jedi. Have more going on, and they're just, like, more tightly written stories, I suppose. Yeah. How about you? Yeah, you said no.
Yeah, same kind of boat, I think. Dust boot. I think that it just gets the suspension of disbelief is just a little bit too much for me.
Yeah.
Because Nolan really feels like he's trying to play it kind of down the line and serious, but there's one decision in particular that I had to deduct a whole half a star for, because I was just like, I just can't overlook that, how Nolan would even justify that and go, yeah, this is a logical thing that would happen within. It's crazy to me. Anyway, I think it's time we get into that. So, give me that spoiler bail.
Oh, good for you. And how was it?
Oh, I got a good one for that.
We are now in the spoiler zone. Anything we say now will absolutely spoil 2012's The Dark Knight Rises. Please, Nolan, this is a formal question to you, and perhaps Jonathan Nolan as well. How did you justify the part of the film where Commissioner Gordon is laying in bed and Mr. Man comes in and he's like, you were right this whole time. Bane and everything, they're in the fucking sewers. They were actually down there. You weren't crazy this whole time. And then Commissioner Gordon, in his bed-addled, completely sonic state of mind, goes, send all of the Gotham Police Department into the sewers. All of them. And then there's four policemen left on the surface. Gotham is like one of the most crime-addled fucking cities like ever, right? And like the Gotham Police Department know that, surely. So in what universe do they go, okay, Bane, everything that's going on, sure, high-level threat. But to send the entire police force into the sewers is crazy. And then for that to be one of the, like, it's like an ongoing thing. Like, the police force are stuck down there for months because they've been fucking, trapped down there. And then it, like, goes into the winter and everything, and fucking Dearest Robin is passing notes down into the sewers and everything to all the police officers. I'm like, I just don't. The Gotham Police Department are the most inept, irrevocably stupid, asinine motherfuckers in this whole movie.
Maybe Bane is right. Maybe the city does deserve to be fucking wiped off the face of the earth.
Maybe that's the point. Yeah, true. Yeah. Maybe that's what Nolan's trying. Maybe Nolan is like low-key like ACAB, and he's just like, what if we put all the police force in the sewers and then trap them down there?
I think that one of my bigger issues was, and this is a problem that's gotten sort of dragged out from the first film. Like, number one, it screams like we didn't have a better idea. It screams very like Star Wars Episode 9, where they're like, okay, what's the motivation for this character to want to hold Gotham hostage? And you go, oh, okay. You remember the really unappealing, really stupid motivation of Ra's al Ghul from the first film, where he went, I want to blow up Gotham because it's gotten too big. And I'm like, that's silly. That's very silly. They just recycled it. Like, Bane's like, well,
remember Ra's al Ghul? His job is not done.
Yeah. Just stupid. I mean, it's nice to sort of just like, if you want, like, a stupid action film where Tom Hardy and a funny mask and a funny voice, like, wants to punch people that's enough for you to be like, all right, sure, you know, here's the MacGuffin, here's the setup for this situation. From that, purely, you're like, fine. And it almost feels like with a lot of these choices that they, but it does actually feel like, I don't know, in the broad sense, there's almost like a complicated like plot, especially in the first bit where they're like, okay, we're going to go to the fucking share market. I'm going to tank the Wayne Enterprises shares, because then that allows this kick on to happen and this and this and this. You're kind of like, okay, sure. But then it just sort of ends up being like, we've taken the city hostage and now you just have to like figure this out. And they don't really want anything past that point, you know. I don't know. I think because I switched my brain off a little bit, I think I maybe did buy a bit of the Big Bane plan, but when you sort of step back after the film and go like, it falls away pretty quickly.
Yeah, because they ride the whole who's the trigger man bit, and you know, like everyone being like, nah, it's a bluff. Bane wouldn't give that out to just any old yobbo. It's totally Bane who's holding the trigger. And then it like low-key is, but then that sets up the whole switch for Miranda Tate as well. Is that what her name is? Yeah, Miranda Tate. Miranda Tate. Crazy name. For her to be, Talia al Ghul for all the fucking comic book heads, I bet they would have absolutely wet themselves when that plot twist comes across. But it didn't ever feel very kind of oomph, you know? Like, finding out that she was Talia al Ghul and she was the one who was carrying the trigger the whole time, I was kind of like, yeah, all right, cool.
Yeah.
Like, I remember there was a twist somewhere in the back half of the film. I just couldn't remember what it was. And then for that to be the twist, like a two birds, one stone kind of a twist, I just, it just didn't really give me much this time around.
The first time I watched this film, I remember this all going down and being like, oh, what? I was like, because she's also like barely, like it's not that she's barely been on screen, but she hasn't really done much.
Yeah.
That cements her as a character.
She kind of just makes out with Bruce that one time, which, by the way, so out of pocket. Like, they're just absolutely. She just comes in and then Bruce is like, she's like, who's this? And then Bruce is like, oh, forget about that. And then they're just like
it's my dead girlfriend. Let me stick my tongue down your throat.
I'm like, whoa. Crazy.
The way it sort of feels is that they had, you know, they were sort of rifling through the backstory. Like, they were rifling through the list of Batman characters and villains and stuff. And they had, like, 12 post-it notes. And they, like, stuck them on a whiteboard. They stuck them up on a pinboard and started, like, sort of squinting and, like, running strings between them.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, fuck, but there's, like, no reason for him to, like, trust her. So, we have to have, like, one thing where, like, it's established that she is now the head of the Wayne Industries board, but now we have to, like, do, like, two short things to make you as the audience trust her. But because she's, like, so sort of shoehorned in, I think you sort of suspect her a little bit from the beginning anyway.
Yeah, you never really get to a point as an audience member where you're, like, fully trusting her, you know?
Which is why
the twist doesn't happen as heavily as it does, is because I'm never fully, like, oh, yeah, Miranda's, like, she's in it. She's here for the gang. Yeah. Mm. And that's the same with, we haven't really talked about her yet, Anne Hathaway as Catwoman. I've said what I've said about Matt Reeves' Batman, and I fucking adore that film. But I'm still yet to see a presentation of Catwoman that actually works, I think.
Sure.
Because, I'm a cisgender white male talking about the presentation of a female character. I'll cop that one immediately. But I like what Nolan does here as far as the push and pull of Catwoman as a person, you know?
Yeah.
Like, she's got her own inner turmoil of, I gotta look out for numero uno because no one ever looks out for myself, so I just gotta look out for myself. And the only way to look out for myself is just to constantly fuck over everyone else who's around me. But it's so difficult to do that kind of moral compass for an audience where it doesn't get infuriating, you know? Where you're like, oh, maybe Catwoman's like, she's actually like here for the long term now. She's actually like, she's with it. She's doing it. And then she's like, oh, actually, fuck you, Batman. Like, when she takes him down to like go see Bane and everything, I thought that was going to be like the turning point of like, oh, damn, like we got Batman and Catwoman. Like, they're doing the thing because they're like doing all the fight stuff together. I'm like, woohoo, let's go. And then she like locks Batman in there and she's like, my bad, gotta do what I gotta do. Sass about it. Text me, okay?
yeah. I, don't know, maybe I didn't feel the same.
That being said, her performance is fucking so good. I really like Anne Hathaway in this
character. Hard not to love Anne Hathaway. Yeah,
she's just so good. Yeah,
she's just a fun actor in general.
The masquerade scene where she's dancing with Bruce, and then she's got that one fucking line where she like whispers in his ear, and she's like, when like it all like crumbles around you or whatever. I was like, oh yeah, Hathaway.
It is strange, I think. Like, I didn't entirely question her motives when she did, like, take him to Bane and then go, like,
get the thing. I get that.
I think one of the stinkers is after that, he comes back and then he's like, oh, I forgive you immediately. This feels a little undeveloped.
And then he's like, okay, take the bike and go blow open the thing in the tunnel so then you can, you know, like, let everyone out. And then she's like, nah, I'm peacing out when I've blown the tunnel. And you're like, what? But I know she comes back and everything, which is probably the whole point, is that, like, it's supposed to set up what we know of Catwoman for then to her to go against that core belief, and then we're like, oh, she's growing. She's fucking getting attached, I guess. Yeah, I don't know. I really enjoy everyone who has played Catwoman, but there's never been like a penultimate where I'm like, fuck yeah. Like, that was it.
Yeah. Well, how do you feel about Zoe Kravitz as Catwoman in the Batman? Like, do you have...
I like the more sapphic elements of what they bring in Matt Reeves' Batman.
I think that it felt like she was more intertwined with the story in that film because
agency. Hey, yeah.
But it's maybe not even that. Like, I thought that she was more tied into the plot. Like, she would keep showing up.
Be there. Yeah. Yeah.
Because she was, I think, being blackmailed or whatever by Falcone.
And like, it was her, like, one of her friends, which I'm certain, who was like one of the roommates or whatever. Yeah, it was like working for Penguin, and then like she goes missing, and then that kind of keeps her in the web. Yeah,
yeah, So I thought she was fun in that. I mean, I watched it once and don't remember. Actually, I don't know if it's good or bad that I could sort of sit here and remember The Dark Knight Rises like beat for beat. Hold up. Because I don't, because alternatively, I think I can remember, like, there was a lot of, in this film, a lot of big, you know, action pieces, set pieces, yeah, right?
The oval, so you can sort of,
you can plot it out time-wise, like, and the bridge and all that. You can plot it out time-wise in your head really well. The Batman, I think that I would have to rewatch, but I don't really remember being, like, completely befuddled by what was going on.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a 3-hour movie, but I never lost track of anything in the Batman. Yeah.
Like, I almost wonder with The Dark Knight Rises, I was just thinking this, I almost wonder whether the film needed, like, another 30 minutes to develop some characters and make you buy them a bit more.
Yeah, I think it's when Nolan gets expository, that's where I always go a bit like, oh, fuck, here we go. You know, like, he does it in Tenet a lot as well, where it's a bunch of characters just sitting around talking and they're just saying a bunch of words and you kind of like, you're here for it. But then eventually, like, the scene goes on for just that little bit too long, or they say a couple too many words that seem like they have weight and gravitas, but you still don't quite fully know like what that means in the long run. Mm-hmm, your brain just kind of starts to go, sure. All right. Oh, it'll all probably make sense a little bit later.
Yeah.
With the Batman, it never felt like that. Like, all of the scenes were just very, like, boots on the ground, present, you know? Like, there is a problem, and we need to talk about it. We need to talk about the problem.
I realize that I'm just not making, like, a delightfully quality argument for or against this film. I just feel like...
Yeah, and I'm kind of the same. I think there's a lot to love about this film, because it is so kooky, which I think is so important. Like, for Nolan to wrap this fucking insane trilogy up, to follow up The Dark Knight, which is one of the most critically acclaimed films of all time, with this, is crazy. The kahunas to have, to be like...
Cojones.
To get Tom Hardy, put him in a mask, and then fucking let him do funny voice, and like, insane. There's so many decisions in this film where I'm like, only Nolan could have the fucking balls to do shit like this. But I just don't know whether it's actually good or whether it's so kooky that I'm gaslighting myself into thinking it's good.
I think that the reason that this thing sticks in our heads is because of those set pieces, because of the scene with the cops charging in on the street and the, which by the way, I mean, it's not always good to question, you know, to go into a film and be like, why did this character do that? That makes no sense, because that is sort of the universal thing with like humans don't always do things that make sense.
Yeah.
Sometimes people do things for honor or you know, that kind of shit. Or they just make mistakes. But stuff like the big charge of the cops going in, they're just like, we all have batons and like 10 of us have handguns. And then here's 300 guys with Kalashnikovs. Let's just charge at the head on like-
And a tank, a fucking tank car, yeah.
Yeah, and then there's things like, yeah, the giant bat thing on the bridge and the- Football stadium, like, is a classic one.
Yeah, the oval pit
in
one,
and of itself is such a big... It's not a big set piece, but it's, like, very memorable. I think because of that, people remember this film, like, because there's so many things that are memorable in it.
Mm.
But it sort of feels like it's, just strung together between these big set pieces and
what
things
like that. Greater than the sum of its parts. Is that the...
It's lesser than the sum of its parts.
Yeah.
No, the saying is greater than the sum of its parts, but I think...
Yes, but in this particular context, yeah. It's lesser than the sum of its parts, yeah.
Mm. Also, I was watching this with my partner and I'm sitting there, like, rubbing my temples for the first, 30 minutes of the film because they haven't seen The Dark Knight. And they're like, so, what's the deal with Harvey Dent? And I'm like, what was it again? And I had to read two separate synopses to two separate summaries to go like, oh, okay. So, the deal was that he was evil, but
Harvey Dent died and then Batman kind of ate it and but he wasn't actually the one.
Batman took it on because it would have because the icon of Harvey Dent was more valuable than like just to the city on its own. So
then
like
Batman,
which we'll see how we like when we get to the Dark
Knight.
How all
that goes, yeah.
When we're directly on that, we'll find out. But that was a real fucking headache as well. But it basically seemed like I gather the people agree that the interesting moral and ethical parts of The Dark Knight were what made that good and shine above Batman Begins. And this film just didn't really have any of that. It was sort of just big set pieces. We blew a plane
memorable,
up in the air.
But not necessarily good.
Yeah. It's not that the motivations were they were a bit ridiculous sometimes, but more that they didn't have more to say. Like the fact that, you know, the Joker's deal was, I wanna expose the absurdity of Batman as a icon, and Harvey Dent's deal was I want to fight back against the corruption within the city, and then he becomes a vigilante himself sort of as a result. That's interesting. This one is just big boxing man.
Yeah. Which is kind of what Bane always was, but
I suppose so, yeah. One of my big nitpicks, and this is some CinemaSins shit, but a fusion reactor doesn't output radiation, and also they can't run on their own. You need to dump, if you stop pumping electricity into a fusion reactor, they just stop. that's fusion reactors. That's the problem with fusion reactors.
It stops in 5 months, Jonathan.
It doesn't explode. It just stops the, they might break if you stop power, but there's actually very little reactive material in them, so they just stop.
Jesus.
Wanker mode,
Do you have any other notes you want to get through? Or should we wrap out to trivia time?
It's a bad episode.
It's a semi-bad film.
You got some... It doesn't feel like it should be this high on the list.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. No.
Douglas, I just had the best fucking idea.
Yeah, hit me with it.
Once this is done,
mm-hmm.
you know, we go on one of those tourney websites
mm-hmm.
where it's like you pit them in pairs against each other until you mm-hmm. have like your quality, like your top ranking of the best, you know. We reorder the top 250.
That's such a good idea. Whoa. That's such a good idea. Wait, should we do that at like the end of the podcast? Like take the whole list and make our 250.
Yeah, I don't think we can sit there and like read it out. I think that would be boring. But I think that we could definitely do it and maybe talk about what we got. Because we've got films that are in the top, like the first 50 that you're just like, this is like unquestionably better than The Dark Knight Rises. Anyway.
Anyway.
Yes, give me some trivia, please.
Trivia time. About a year before this movie's release, writer, producer, and director Christopher Nolan mentioned he was considering using a mixture of CGI and deleted scenes from The Dark Knight to have the Joker appear briefly, which Bryan Singer had done to bring back Marlon Brando as Jor-El in Superman Returns. Nolan ultimately decided it was disrespectful to Heath Ledger's legacy.
Tell that to modern filmmakers who...
Yeah, right? Like, there is such a notable absence.
It actually hasn't happened that many times, but the key ones with Rogue One.
Yeah.
I mean...
That's a yucky one.
It was different with it. You know, I don't know how I feel about it. With dead people doing small cameo roles, I'm sort of like, yeah, I'll allow it. With, like... I think that it's been pushed down too much. Like, I think there's a lot of people that have gone like, oh, we want to do a, you know, 20 hours of motion capture, performance capture on this person so that we can just make a digital version of them that we can like slap into anything. I think a lot of like big Hollywood big wigs or like big tech bro dickheads have gone like, this is what we want to do. And I think that thankfully a lot of people in the industry have like pushed back against it.
Gone like, let's talk about the ethical kind of. Yeah.
I think it's currently still a bit of a boogeyman, but I am a little worried that if we don't keep stressing about it, it will become a reality in some capacity.
Yeah.
Anyway, I think that was probably a good move. I think the real question is, why did you not come up with a better concept for this film?
Yeah. Why didn't you write it better, Nolan? Around the concept... Nolan said that this movie's theme deals with pain. For Batman Begins, it was fear. And for The Dark Knight, it was chaos.
Okay.
Which I think tracks, yeah, because Batman Begins is all about him overcoming his fear of, like, bats to become Batman.
Yeah.
This one is about pain, both mental and physical. And Dark Knight, yeah, I remember it being pretty chaotic because the Joker, baby.
Yeah. I mean, the other thing with fear was that it was all about, like, Scarecrow and he's like...
Yeah, true. Yeah. Which, by the way, my Cillian Murphy cameo.
Yeah.
Woo-hoo!
So good. He's in the Dark Knight as well.
One star alone, baby.
I found out that he never really gets properly dealt with at the end of Batman Begins.
Yeah, no.
Like, he gets gassed with his own gas, and then he just gets better.
Yeah.
So, he's in Dark Knight briefly as well, which is an interesting move. I mean-
Love Cillian Murphy. He's
do you like Cillian Murphy? Don't have many big problems with Cillian Murphy.
Finally got his Academy Award as well, by the way. Nice. For Oppenheimer. So fucking happy about that. Tom Hardy, standing at 5'9", had to wear 3-inch lifts to make his character Bane appear as tall or taller than co-stars Christian Bale, Morgan Freeman, and Michael Caine.
That's really funny.
Which, by the way, I don't think we talked about Michael Caine all that much in this film, but I think this is one of the bestest of Alfreds.
Nah.
You reckon?
He's just monologue. It's all he's got.
I guess. But he gets to show more emotion, which is
He's got film bro monologue, but he gets to show emotion through monologue. Like, he doesn't really have anything else going on. Point. It's very... Mm. It's legitimately, like, tell, don't show type shit. It's Alfred has emotions, and you know because he's going to cry at you for 6 minutes.
I tried. I'm sorry. I've let you down.
I won't bury another Batman.
I won't bury another Wayne. I can't do it. When Selina Kyle disappears from a rooftop, Batman's remark, "So that's what that feels like," is lifted directly from the DC graphic novel Kingdom Come. Even the circumstance is similar, except it was with Superman. I actually really enjoyed that line. I thought
that was really good, yeah.
Especially in the Bale voice as well. And he's got that dopey fucking face on. He's like, "So that's what that feels like." You know how Bale does like the open mouth Batman a lot? He does the like...
His fucking stupid voice, man. We hated it in the last movie.
Where's your trigger? Yeah, it sounds like he's like trying to swallow his own teeth. Going? It's crazy.
Well, wait, was the Batman like that? Matt Reeves, the Batman. Did he do the voice thing for that?
No, he goes husky, but it's not like my favorite one is where it's his first line. He says, "I'm vengeance," but he still says it in a way that is like. Like heavy, you know? It's not in a like, "Oh, fuck it, this guy," you know? Like, it's actually, it's got a little bit of oomph to it where I'm like, okay.
I just feel like Christian Bale has like a stupid voice.
Yeah, that's probably it. But he keeps on getting called to do all these fucking voice acting roles with Studio Ghibli as well. Like,
he has to amp it up.
Crazy.
To make it feel intimidating, whereas
then,
I think...
And then you get Robert Pattinson in the voice acting booth doing fucking the Heron, and then everyone's like, "That's Robert Pattinson? I just let Robert Pattinson do everything, please. Just give him more. When is his Academy Award? We got Cillian Murphy one now. We just need to get Robert his."
Yeah,
it's coming for you, babe. I feel it. Maybe he's in the next. Is it Bong Joon-ho or Park Chan-wook? Fuck, it's coming out next year. He's the lead in that, which I'm like, ooh, there's opportunity. It could happen. It might happen for him. While you're tracking that down, Anne Hathaway has said that she desperately coveted the role of Catwoman and was a complete nervous wreck after her audition. The first time her agent phoned after a screen test, he said he had good news and asked if Hathaway was sitting down. Hathaway immediately screamed, quote, "I'm Catwoman," end quote, and ran around the room in a frenzy. Unfortunately, her agent had to calm Hathaway down. He had called to let her know that she'd been invited to host the Academy Awards. Hathaway has said she was so shocked she went numb at the offer. Fortunately, shortly thereafter, her agent phoned again to let her know that she had been offered the part of Catwoman as well.
He's in Mickey 17.
Mickey 17, that's it. Yeah.
Yes.
That's so funny.
That's really funny. Yeah.
So sweet. At one point, it was rumored that the Penguin was to have been featured as one of this movie's major villains and would have been played by Philip Seymour Hoffman. Nolan quickly denied the rumors.
That would have been so good.
That would have been so fucking good.
Oh.
Nolan quickly denied the rumors, saying that the character would have been difficult to adapt for his version of Batman. Ugh.
Yeah.
Ugh.
I mean, he worked for... I don't know why. He worked for fucking... Mr. Freeze would be hard to do for this version of Batman.
Yes.
But the penguin is just a gangster with a funny nose.
Yeah.
I feel like he would have fit perfectly.
It would work perfectly, yeah. Anyway, I don't know what kind
And I feel like a big deal with the Penguin is he seems like he fucking hates himself. And Philip Seymour Hoffman was just- That was his trademark.
Yeah.
He just seemed like he loathed himself.
Yeah.
R.I.P.
But yeah, rest in peace, Philip. But- And lastly, in the scene at the end where the lawyer's clerk reveals John Blake's real name, the word Robin was dubbed in during post-production to keep this a secret from all of the crew, including Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
Okay.
So he had no idea that he was, like, low-key Robin.
Yeah. It was such a strange move because it, like, totally reads as, like-
Sequel.
Where- yeah. Or, like, we're going to turn this into a TV show.
We're
going to
do-
like
Yeah,
that.
Yeah. We're going to do, like, the Darkwing, but- The TV show.
Which I could have liked. I don't know.
Joseph Gordon-Levitt, yeah, he's a good kid. I like JGL. He's a good guy.
Yeah. I've seen complaints that he's, like, character that doesn't, like, do anything that special, but I think that he's sort of just, like, a nice face for-
The fucking GCPD, because Jim Gordon spends half of the fucking film in a fucking stretcher, so, yeah.
He's fun to watch.
Yeah. That's it. That's all I got.
Damn. I forgot. I'm not going to say it's my shining light moment, Douglas.
Oh, yes.
One of the most bizarre, strange moments in this film is when they have the stock building. What the fuck's that called again? Exchange. The stock exchange heist. They drive away. It's like the middle of the day. And then it's like 12 hours have passed in like 10. 10 minutes.
And that wasn't going to be my one, but yeah.
Like, it goes from, like, straight up, like, 3 minutes later, it's him, like, going through the streets, and it's pitch fucking black. Like, moonless night, pitch black.
Oh, yeah, and it is too.
And because, like, I was a little zoned out for this film, but I was immediately like, that's weird.
Yeah.
Which is how you know it was bad, if I picked it up in that state. Yeah, you caught
that shit immediately. I fucking blacked out, I guess. In the stock exchange scene, when Bane comes in and he's throwing one of the stock exchange guys around, I realize that's fucking Glenn Powell.
Who's Glenn Powell?
Glenn Powell's a little fucking little twig boy. He's in Top Gun Maverick, that new
No shit.
Yeah, that new romance film that is apparently like incredibly mid, but everyone's just in it because he's like kind of cute. Anyone but you. Yeah, that's Glenn Powell.
Is he the guy who's in like, it's like the barbershop striped shirt with the white collar? Like the really wanky looking.
He has lines. Not like he's got butcher lines.
Butcher stripe, sorry. Not barber stripe.
I think so.
Like he's like one of the, he's one of the stock guys. He's one of the stock.
Crazy. He like Bane like full smashes his head against the desk. And I was like, yes, Glenn Powell. You get it, my little twink boy. But anyway, time to leave, I guess.
He is traitor number one in the cast.
That's my guy.
Poor guy. Yeah, I'm just trying to see if there's any photos of him, see if it can confirm that he's who I thought he... There's one photo. He is that guy. I think because he gets... Does he end up getting strapped on one of the bikes when they're driving off?
Oh, I think so, yeah.
Anyway.
No.
Anyway. You're on a trivia, Douglas?
Yeah.
All right, fine. If you enjoyed this episode of the 250, we put out new episodes every week. Tuesday midnight, Australian Eastern Standard Time, which comes out to Monday afternoons in Europe, Monday mornings in America. Douglas, where can people go if they want more info on the podcast?
If you'd like more information about the podcast, you can go to www.250.com. There are three links at the top of the website. There is a link to our Instagram, which is at 250pod. There's a link to reach out to us via email, which is mail@250.com. And there's a link to our Spotify, where you can listen to us, but we are available wherever good podcasts are found.
Douglas and I both use Letterboxd for our movie and tracking and movie tracking stuff. Once again, I keep changing this up every episode and I don't have a script. My account on Letterboxd is Uber, that is UUUPAH, and Douglas.
My account is Ienzo Knight, IENZOKNIGHT, Ienzo Knight. You can look up Uber, Ienzo Knight, or 250, the Letterboxd search engine, and you'll find us. We do written reviews for all the films that we talk about here on the 250, as well as any other films that we watched in our spare time. I like have to go, so I'm not going to spend too much time talking about these films, but I watched Poor Things out of curiosity because Emma Stone won Best Actress at the Academy Awards. Really fun. Really fun. You will love that film. You'll be fucking dick wet for that film. You'll adore it. There are some things and certain complaints that I've read, and I'm like, nah, that's valid. I get it, but I still think it's a very entertaining little slice of cinema. And I also watched A Silent Voice, which is an animated film directed by Naoko Yamada, the gang over at ABC Animation, Kyoto Animation, who also did Nichijou and I Want to Eat Your Pancreas and all those kinds of things. And it was the last thing I was possibly expecting that film to be, and it made me cry. So...
Okay. Oh, sure. I might check it out.
10 out of 10. Really good. Oh, 4 out of 4.5.
I watched one thing, which was Madam Web, Douglas. All right. Our movie's not very good. It's what I would like in that film, too, is, you know, like a mid-tier, like, late 2010s TV show. Like, like a crime procedural or something like that. Like, there's people who are behind that. They are passionate, but... Frankly speaking, if they were more skilled, they'd be working in film. and you know, and they'd have a bigger budget. It felt like one of those shows stretched over 2 hours. Like, the villain's voice is almost completely ADR'd in, and it is so, like, you can tell immediately.
Not in a way that it makes sense with Bane. Yeah.
so much. Well, he wasn't 80 yard in. That's the other trick. I don't think. Or was Tom Hardy? It doesn't feel like it's his voice coming out. And so much of it feels like you're on a sound stage. Like so much of the set work. It was bizarre. Yeah. I always have this hope when people are like shit panning a film that I'll be like, oh, they were like over, you know, people are being too harsh.
Everyone's just overreacting. Yeah.
Yeah. And then I watch it. I'm like, oh, yeah.
Yeah. You're like, damn. Fucking general populace. All right. Next week, Dune Part 1 and Part 2 bonus episode. Tune in for that one. If you've gone and seen Dune Part 2 yet, if not, make sure you go check it out this week so you can be ready for next week.
Yeah. And then Old Boy after that, Douglas.
And then Oldest Boy.
Witness
for the Prosecution. We keep on forgetting about it. It's Billy. We've been talking about it. And because you've watched Old Boy first, it gaslit me into thinking that Old Boy was next. And I nearly went and watched it. But then we were like, oh, yeah, Witness for the Prosecution. So Billy Wilder after that.
Yeah.
Have a good one.
Cool. Enjoy your thing that you're off to, Douglas.
Drink water. I'm going to work.
Enjoy work, buddy. See you, everybody.
Goodbye, everyone.
Goodbye.
See you next week. In the past. Ooh.